Welcome to Booked, the game which opens the dusty cabinet of literature and sneezes. Dust and snot from a literary sneeze, dirtying the window and hanging from the trees. Taking part, our regular teams, Miles Kington, a man of laughter and music, and Dilly Keane, a woman of music and laughter. And competing for a place in the literary canon, but not too close to the gunpowder, Roger McGough, writer and performer, and Mark Thomas, performer and writer. Now we've got our shorts on, it's time to go through the players' tunnel, careful, and onto the pitch. We've given each of the panellists a pack of cards. Each card has written upon it a type of literary food, like Popeye's spinach or Bluto's vegetarian lasagna. All you have to do is describe the food so your partner guesses it, and if the other team salivates, you get an extra point and a tissue. You can only pass on one, and you've got a minute to get as many as you can. Miles and Dilly start now.
Would you like this, little girl? Mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the first of them?
Apple?
Yes.
No, why
from,
is apple?
Yes.
A revenge play, a nasty revenge play here, and fruit used therein. It's she was a
banana.
Banana?
That's revenge for you?
No, it depends
how she uses it.
I don't even know what this is, so I'm going to pass on that one.
This was from a children's book where she had very long blonde hair and she grew taller and taller. And there was a special piece of bakery that said...
Eat me.
Yes.
Biscuit, eat me.
Cake.
Okay, cake. This is actually the same body of work, Lewis Carroll. One of the queens, she baked some...
Tarts.
Right.
30 seconds.
And this is... There was a score and 420 backwards. Yes.
This is actually Jesus. He turned these into a feast for 5,000.
10 seconds.
Loaves and fishes. Please, sir, could I have some more?
Oliver Twist, he wanted porridge. No, was it soup? No, thing.
Gruel.
Time up.
Roger and Mark, off you go now.
A great cowboy character in the Beano or the Dandy.
Dan's pies. Dan's big Dan. What's his?
Yes, you know,
the desperate. Big cow pie.
Yes.
This is a Peruvian animal that was found on a train station, and he had a jar of it.
Honey.
No, you're near it. You put it on your toast. It's a bit like jam,
marmalade.
But it's not. It's posh.
Marmalade. Posh marmalade.
And it's somebody's marmalade, isn't it? It's not somebody's. It's an animal. It's a furry animal. What's his name? Bernard Cribbins does the voiceover on the telly thing. Is it Bernard Cribbins? I think it's Bernard Cribbins.
Wombles.
No, it's near a Womble, though. It's very close to a Womble. It's a little like a Womble, but it wears a duffel coat.
Oh, Paddington.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry. This is a Dickensian story and sort of food that you gobble down a certain time of year.
A Christmas cake or something, isn't it?
Well, what do you gobble it down? Gobble it down.
Turkey, lovely. Somebody's turkey. Oh, this is a poem. This is A.A. Milne.
10 seconds.
And it's whatever's the matter with Doody Doo. She's crying with all her might and main, and it is lovely something for...
In the rain.
No, it's a dinner. It's a dinner.
Oh.
It's a pudding.
It's pudding.
And you get it.
Treacle.
And the stuff grows a lot in China. It's small and it's white. You boil it.
Time's up, I'm afraid. So what was
it? Pudding.
It was rice pudding.
Right, time's
rice pudding,
up.
Yeah. Oh, it didn't go well, didn't it?
This round's called Beginnings and Endings. In this game, the panellists have to write two finely honed paragraphs that parody the start and finish of a well-known book. Easy money. So, Miles, we gave you The Decline and Fall by Evelyn Waugh, a novel of bigamy, Catholicism and odd goings-on after Lights Out. So what's your new Beginnings and Endings?
So, said Paul Pennyfeather's guardian, you've been sent down from Oxford University in disgrace. Yes, said Paul, I'm afraid so. I also have debts left over from Oxford University totalling some £1,300. The guardian groaned. There's nothing for it, my boy. I can think of only one job for which you're suited. You're going to say prep school teacher, aren't you, said Paul. No, I don't think you'd do well at that. But I think you have what it takes to be the hero of a 20th century English novel. What's the money like, said Paul. There's no money involved at all. Well, I'll take it, said Paul, confident that something else would turn up soon, and that working in an Evelyn war novel would just be a stopgap. Right, the end. By the time that Paul Pennyfeather had been the hero of an English novel for 50 years, he was beginning to think he would never get a real job at all. Then, one day, Evelyn Waugh died and stopped writing novels. Paul Pennyfeather was without a job at last, never having had a proper one to begin with. He put an ad in the Times Literary Supplement. Experienced fictional hero, willing to do anything, go anywhere, as long as I can go on being hapless. The next day, there's a knock at the door. Hurrah, thought Paul. It's the answer to my ad. Perhaps Tom Sharp, starting another novel, needs me. The man at the door did not look like an author. I'm from Barclays Bank. You left Oxford in 1929. Yes? With an overdraft of £1,300? Yes. Taking interest into account and inflation, you now owe us £800,000. Moments later, the man from Barclays Bank in Oxford lay dead on the floor, felled by a furious Pennyfeather. Moments after that, Paul Pennyfeather was the chief suspect in a new Inspector Morse mystery. A book from which, though he did not yet know it, he was not to emerge alive.
Mark, we also gave you Decline and Fall, but you got Gibbons' Decline and Fall set in the last days of the Roman Empire, which are actually a Thursday and a Friday, so what have you done with it?
The last days, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, Gibbons, which is one of my favourite books. For seven centuries, the Roman Empire dominated the known world. They had conquered the known world with discipline, considered barbarism, and a well-orchestrated outing of Asterix and Obelix. The single most important weapon was the road, the straight road, the Romans' secret weapon. Without it, they were just a group of lost murderers tromping around the woods in togas. And then this is the end bit. They were a lost group of murderers in short togas. But they weren't in the woods, they were on the road. Turn left. No, turn right. Which direction is it? For God's sakes, indicate. Is that the junction we want? Where's the services? They had been cunningly trapped on a huge miasma of crisscrossing roads and intersections that inevitably lead back to the point where they had started. They were doomed forever to haunt the highways of the Midlands in panic and anger till finally every last one of them had died. The architects of the roads looked upon them. We have won, the empire has fallen, but what shall we call these roads that have thwarted the Italians? I know, shouted someone, Spaghetti Junction.
Dilly, you've got Out of Africa by Karen Blixen, a love story involving farming, white shorts and Meryl Streep smiling enigmatically against a blood-red sunset.
And this is the introduction. I once had a farm. Or should I say, it once had me. It showed me its room. Isn't it good? African wood. And these are the closing lines. Eventually, I had to say farewell to my farm in Africa. Africa, Africa. How I have loved to say that name over and over again. Africa, Africa. I wanna be in Africa. Lots of space there in Africa. Plenty of servants in Africa. I wanna be in Africa.
Roger, you've got The Cat in the Hat by Dr. Seuss, a book to teach children how to read, which is very useful for families with talking cats with stripy tubes on their heads.
Indeed, it's so good I've kept the beginning pretty well as is. The sun did not shine, it was too wet to play. So we sat in the house all that cold, cold, wet day. I sat there with Sally, we sat there, we two, and I said, how I wish we had something to do. And then something went bump, how that bump made us jump. We looked, then we saw him step in on the mat. We looked and we saw him, the cat in the hat. I know some new tricks, said the cat in the hat. A lot of good tricks. I will show them to you. Your mother will not mind at all if I do. Then Sally and I did not know what to say. Our mother was out of the house for the day. Then the last two verses. Now mother's in prison and we are in care. She was charged with neglect, but we don't think it's fair. The social services should play tricks like that. Sending a policeman dressed up like a cat.
Now, sound effects, the round in which the panel have prescribed noises to be taken hourly for sound results. All the noises will give you clues to a famous work of literature. Roger and Mark, listen to this.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Wipe the tear, baby dear, from your eye.
Goodbye, goodbye. We're leaving you, Skippy. Goodbye. We wish you fun, goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
partly the plot and partly the title in that one.
They get around a bit, didn't they?
Mm.
Farewell to Arms at some point. Goodbye and...
You've got it.
Have I? Yes. Got it? Oh,
well done.
Well, Farewell to Arms. All right.
If you get it straight away, mess about a bit.
I'm sorry, I didn't realise I haven't got the hang of it yet.
He's just showing off, sir.
Now, Miles and Dilly, this is one for you, but it's only 14 seconds worth, so listen carefully.
The music sounds as if it should be recognised. I don't think I did, but...
No, it sounded like a sort of quasi-Dr. Zhivago.
Or May Gray.
A bit of Bella Laika.
It would help you to know it's from Russia with Love.
Postman Andy Knox.
No. Spies is a kind of link because of the Russia with Love thing.
Spy who came in with a cold.
Opening the door and shutting it again. In the,
The spy who opened the door twice.
It's the kind of place you normally have a door.
A wall.
A room.
Bigger.
Big room.
More than one room.
A ballroom.
More than one room. House.
Right. Oh, God almighty.
It's the...
Small town.
The Russia house.
The Russia house.
Is that a spy book?
Yes.
Who's it going?
By John Lee Kelly, the well-known country singer. Here's one for you, Roger and Mark. This one's got a lot of story in it, but also clues to the title. If I were a rich man, there you go.
Yeah.
People taking off cats. Is that a clue? Men pretending to be cats.
Cats is in it, yeah.
Yeah.
Cats is in.
On the roof. Cat on hot tin on the roof.
Yes.
Fiddler on the roof. Fiddler on the roof. Top hole on the roof. Cats. Meow. Happy birthday.
Yep.
Fiddler on the roof.
Cat on a hot tin roof.
Exactly.
Yep. Right, Miles and Dilly, this one's really hard, but you get the title and also a bit about the setting and some very obscure noises, I think.
Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you.
Hope wasn't in that.
No.
Is it The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe?
It is. Very good. And now to conversation consequences. This is the round where two unlikely literary characters rub each other up the wrong way, making sparks and small puffs of blue smoke. A bit like a meeting of the Arts Council Literature Panel. So, Roger, who've you got?
I've got the plant from the Little Shop of Horrors. With a big, big plant. And I have Mr. McGregor from Beatrix Potter. And, in fact, they find themselves in Beatrix Potter's garden up there in the Lake District.
1, 2, 3, 4, 6 little rabbits. Ah, I shall skin you and chop off your heads and have you for supper. Feed me.
Who said that?
Feed me.
Who's there?
Feed me.
Am I dreaming? Are you a talking plant?
I'm a hungry plant, man, and I need food.
Ah, you mean some biofeed, fresh manure?
Those rabbits will do for starters, man. Head, skins, and all.
Well, this I must see. Out you come, Flopsies. 1, 2, and 3.
Chomp, chomp, delicious. Now, how's about a little duck on the side? Do you have a little duck there?
Well, you're in luck, Master Planter. Here comes Jemima Puddle Duck, a waddling up the path. Jemima, you like nice surprises, don't you?
Quack, quack.
Well, cup for this.
Gobble, gobble, grunt, gobble. Mm-hmm. Tasty duck, McGregor. Feed me.
Now, enough, enough is enough.
Feed me.
Enough is enough, Mr. Plant. Everything has its price. In other words, what's in it for me?
How would you like a brand new car? Go to Top of the Pops and play guitar. Go to Hollywood and be a movie star. I'm the plant that can make it real. You want it, you got it.
Oh, you smooth-talking plant, you. So, what do you fancy now?
Now, let me see, yeah. Groovy, that big, juicy piece of meat over there.
No, I think not, no.
You want it, you got it.
Oh, what the hell. Miss Potter, could I have a word, please? Yes, over here by this big plant.
Miles, your unlikely couple.
It's Jimmy Porter, who is the original angry young man from Look Back in Anger, and Hamlet, who is the original moody young man, at a London School of Economics social evening. And they're both male parts, but apparently Dilly's always wanted to do a Danish accent on radio, so she's doing Hamlet. From Denmark, another bloody foreign student coming over doing a useless course in media studies, are you?
No, I...
At the expense of the British taxpayer, it goes without saying?
No, it's not...
Coming
that.
Over here, sleeping with our English girls, drinking all our Carlsberg lager. What are you studying?
Constitutional monarchy.
Constitutional monarchy? What on earth use to you or anyone can constitutional monarchy be?
A lot. I'm going to be the next King of Denmark.
I might have known it. You're not just a layabout foreign student, you're an idle, rich foreign layabout student with a phony title and an easy life.
It's not that easy being a prince.
Go on, name one thing that's difficult.
My father was murdered by my uncle.
All right, that's one. Name another.
My mother has married my uncle, who killed my father.
All right, that's a couple. Anything else?
My girlfriend went mad and drowned herself.
Well, I'm not surprised, especially marrying to a family like yours. Is that it? Is that the best you can do?
You seem very angry. Why are you so angry?
I seem angry? I'm flaming furious, mate. Shall I tell you why? Because I'm born into a country where small-minded reigns supreme. Because I'm forced to be English, and that means I've been born into a backwater where parochialism is the order of the day.
It could have been worse. You could be Danish.
Don't give me that. What's wrong with being Danish?
I'll tell you what's wrong with being Danish. Because wherever you go and say you are Danish, people say, ah, blue cheese. People say, wonderful, wonderful Copenhagen. People say, ah, the little mermaid. Hans Christian bloody Andersen. And they say, bacon, Danish bacon. When I say my name is Hamlet, everyone says, we'll call you bacon then. And they laugh as if it is funny. But it isn't funny. And you know why it isn't funny? It's because the English have no sense of humour. The English are arrogant and proud of their humour, but my God, they have no humour. And they are all dull and boring, and their women are about as sexy as travelling rugs. And English cooking is like pet food warmed up, and I hate the English.
My dear fellow, I couldn't have put it better myself. Let me buy you a pint.
Mark, who have you got?
Well, I've got The Prodigal Son from the Bible. And Keith Tallant, who is the darts player in London Fields by Martin Amis. And he's a bit of just a tad sleazy. And Keith Tallant meets the Prodigal Son in a pig pen. That's where he's working. The Prodigal Son works in a pig pen, if you remember your Bible properly, as I'm sure you do. They meet in a pig pen.
Wake up. Come on, wake up. Wake up. Oh, shut up. Stop snoring, for God's sake. You're scaring the pigs.
Oh, God. God. What on earth? Where is it? Who are you?
I'm the Prodigal Son.
There's a pub. Prodigal Son's a pub. You're not a pub. Don't muck me about, don't. I've got a hangover that would knock out Mike Tyson and have a go at him in the showers, so just don't muck me about. Just what's your name?
I don't have a name. I'm known as a prodigal son because I'm a parable.
Well, we've all got a cross to bear, haven't we?
I represent sinners.
Well, lawyer, barrister, like, is
no,
it?
No,
brief?
No, look, I'm looking after pigs because I asked my father for my inheritance before he died.
Well, there's a lesson in that, isn't there?
Exactly.
Yeah, you should have killed him. Then he wouldn't have chucked you in here with the pigs, would he?
Oh, he gave me the money and... I must return and beg his forgiveness. According to the logic of parables, my father should welcome me with open arms, hold a huge party to celebrate my return to the fold, and allow me to live with him until he dies, and I get another bite at the inheritance.
Time passes.
Rejoice, for my prodigal son has returned. Kill the best oxen and prepare the best wine. His appearance may have been changed by reckless living, but he is home.
Well, cheers, Dad. Pardon me, ladies.
And finally to Dilly.
Well, I had Horatio Hornblower meeting Mellors from Lady Chatterley's lover in a rather private sort of place. I think the whereabouts will become evident gradually.
A life on the ocean wing, a life on the ocean wing, a life on the ocean
wing. Oh, MacDonald, for me, you, another for me, and a piggy.
Life on the ocean wing, the ocean. Oh, shiver me timbers. Hem, you over there?
Pardon, I?
I said, sorry to bother you over there. I've run out of paper. Could pass over a sheet or two.
Hey, thou'rt a cheeky bugger, interrupting a man in the middle of his private moments. I'll hand thee three sheets, no more.
Three sheets? What, to the wind? Are you a naval man?
Nay, any part of the body pleases me. Here's the paper, man. I'll roll it up and stick it through yon convenient little hole in the wall where it not seems to have fallen out of woodwork all convenient-like.
Stout man. Is that a North Country accent I detect?
Happen.
No, I have men from the North Country serving me as we speak.
Oh, men under it. Gradely, lad, gradely.
For I am none other than Hornblower.
Hornblower? Well, I'll go to the foot of our stairs.
Indeed. None other than Horatio Hornblower of the Atropos.
Nay, lad, don't take on so. Every man suffers from the Atropos now and again after a night on booze. Hey, has anyone ever told thee thou looks reet handsome in the gold braid and shiny buttons?
Not for ages. Not even my wife, Maria. And somehow I've always felt a yearning for something else. Someone who appreciates the swing of a bell-bottom, the hang of a lanyard. I suppose it's an urge to hoist the mizzenmast myself, perhaps.
Greatly happen summat, and no other way thou feelst.
The next round is a cross between an infant school blurb writing class and the Times crossword puzzle. We asked bookish-looking members of the public to describe a literary work without mentioning the title. All the panellists have to do is guess which book they're talking about. Roger and Mark.
The key to this is a key.
It's a tale of recovery.
The heroine is an orphan.
Transplanted from India.
Friendly Robin.
The writer was Manchester-born.
She emigrated to the USA.
Muggy Smith played the housekeeper.
It's a horticultural tale.
And there's a spoilt child.
Right then.
Well, they're looking smug over there, so Miles Kingston.
Plants.
We know almost as much as the audience knows.
Do you?
It's girly stuff.
Is it girly?
India. Written by... What was that... Reference to India. Was that the writer or the person in the book?
No, the heroine was an orphan transplanted from India.
Was she?
Mm-hmm. Horticultural?
Right. Horticultural.
So growing sort of planty, sort of green, possibly wheat fields.
Smaller than a field.
It's a pot, isn't it?
Bigger than a pot.
Garden. A garden?
That you can't tell anybody about.
Secret garden.
Secret garden.
Secret garden. Yay! Miles and Dilly.
A writer in a hurry.
Scientist dazzled by the sunlight looking at cucumbers.
A Nottinghamshire doctor.
Then a sea captain. Tied up in the plot.
The long and short of it.
The hero faints when his wife kisses him.
A slang term for a hooligan.
Parody of the travelogue.
Bitter satire.
Size isn't everything.
God, I'm not looking smug now.
No.
Cucumbers, sea.
Scientist... Size isn't everything.
That's an important bit. Size isn't everything. Lots of stuff in there about size, which is important for the book.
Gulliver's Travels?
Yes. Mark and Roger.
Monster Munch.
An early boy's own adventure.
Lots of wrestling and sleepless nights.
Phaeton and swimming.
Denmark and Sweden.
Norse myth.
A necklace. A monstrous mummy's boy.
Marshland creatures.
Very, very old.
The gladiators would have been at home here.
Unreadable. Unread.
So I probably won't have read it then. So, Vikings? Wrestling?
Norse.
So there's a...
Wrestling and sleepless knights.
Can I? All right, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Of the round table, that sort of... No, not... Sort of Arabian. No,
no.
Probably not those kind of knights.
Older than
older
the knights.
Knights
of the round table.
Older than the knights of the round table?
Yeah.
Is it a saga?
Mm-ish.
Mm-hmm. Saga. Beowulf.
Beowulf, yes. Beowulf, yeah.
Finally, Miles and Dilly again.
A graphic account of survival.
Made into a cartoon film.
You would need this book if you were in the South Pacific. Post-apocalyptic DIY.
Working class couple, recently retired from London. Leaflets from their local library. Prove useless.
It's a bitter satire on government advice.
One of the main characters is a lavatory cleaner.
Nuclear, not the weather forecast.
It goes from orange to blue.
But it has an explosive finish.
It's that wonderful cartoon book, isn't it, by...
That's not the exact title.
This is one of Raymond Riggs's things.
Yes.
It is. I connect nuclear with Raymond Riggs. In fact, I blame
it. The way the world ends. This is the way the world ends or something?
No.
It's not the wind. The wind.
Wind.
Cold wind. The
big. There's wind in it.
Wind.
Wind.
Where the wind blows.
Yes. Where the wind blows.
Oh, good.
To end with, we've got a new round called Lonely Hearts. In this game, the panel have to imagine the kind of advert a literary character might place in the Lonely Hearts column of their local newspaper. For example, the giant from Jack and the Beanstalk might write, 80-foot-high man with penthouse property would like to meet big woman with children to chase. Home counties preferred. Got it right. So, Miles, do you want to start?
Dr. Watson. Medical gentleman, middle-aged, emerging from long-term relationship with bachelor gent recently lost in Swiss climbing accident. Seeks new friend. No pipe smoking, drug taking, violin playing, amateur detection, boxing or gun practice in flat.
Roger, what have you got?
Kathy from Wuthering Heights. Bored housewife, North Yorkshire. Seeks wild spirit to bring out the gypsy in her. Interests, a fell walking, needlepoint and adultery. No time wasters.
Dilly.
I've got Becky Sharp from Vanity Fair, and I think she, being very modern, would advertise on the internet. Bill Gates, are you out there? Potential super trophy wife with good head for figures and good figure for heads seeks caring billionaire with low life expectancy to share the finer things in life. I love to be cosseted, so I'll show you my hard drive and you can insert your floppy disk. Genuine replies only with recent bank statement to email bsharp4928slag.
And Mark.
This is Captain Hook. Male salty sea dog. Hates green reptiles and noisy clocks. Seeks woman with no fear of prosthetic kitchenware. For first mate position.
Well, we better finish there, but before we go, our closing poem for today. Ending a Radio 4 programme with a rhyming poem is quite a revolutionary thing to do by Ian McMillan. Ending a Radio 4 programme with a rhyming poem is something they haven't done since the days of the Hoem service. It all remains to thank our teams, Tilly Keane, Miles Kington, Roger McGough and Mark Thomas. Was devised by Mark Yobst and researched by Felicity Goodall. It was produced in Bristol by Rob Kettridge and presented by me, Ian McMillan, the real Pocahontas. Goodbye.